Welcome to the 130 BPM podcast. It is December 1st, 2011. My name is Will Ryan. I'm the host. I'm here with Sean Hykin.
Hey.
Rob Hykimian.
What's up?
And our guest today, Erica Dean.
Hello.
How is everybody? How was the Thanksgiving break? Did anybody do anything? Was different from what you usually do?
I don't have a usual thing. This is my first Thanksgiving in America.
How was it?
It was good. My friend, who I haven't seen since, like, the last day of high school, he lives here now. That's why he invited me over. So I was like, hell yeah, let's go. So it was really good. So,
would you do it again?
I just hung out, ate food.
Yeah, it's just eating food. I don't know. That's
pretty much.
Eating food and watching football, but though in our case it was soccer, not football.
Yeah, soccer.
Did you guys see Nickelback at the halftime of the Lions Packers game?
No, I switched over for that.
How was it?
I mean, it was about what you would expect it to be.
So pretty. it was a
Nickelback performance. I mean,
it's weird. They just came out with an album, right? So.
I think so.
Yeah.
And it's selling really well. I don't know if I've ever met a Nickelback fan. It's weird.
Oh. Did they exist? They're all over my heart.
They exist then. Okay.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
They have to exist. They've been the number one selling band of the last decade.
Yeah.
They have to.
Yeah.
I mean, fans have to exist somewhere.
Let's talk about some news. Broadcast is coming out with a new album with the previously recorded Trish Keenan vocals. Trish Keenan, who passed away late last year, I think. Mm-hmm. So
I think it was earlier this year, actually.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Which definitely, obviously before her time, but it was just a huge loss because Broadcast felt like, you know, they'd hit their stride, but I feel like they had some potential left to make good on. So.
Yeah. I don't know how good this album could be in the end. I guess it'll be decent. I mean, I remember when Mark Linkous died of Sparkle Horse, they said they were going to turn his current workings into a release, but it's been almost 2 years now and nothing's come from that. So who knows if anything will actually come from this broadcast thing. But I guess, like, they said that on the day Mark Linkous died, probably before they'd really, like, looked into what he had, whereas this has come months later and, you know, it's actually from her partner in Broadcast, so I guess it's definitely a possibility, which would be nice.
And Broadcast is, like, experimental enough that they can do pretty much anything with her vocals, and it would sound okay, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
But I'm looking forward to it, just to see if that turns into anything. I don't know.
What is the best posthumous release ever?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
It would have to be Life After Death, right?
Wait, who's that by? Tupac?
Biggie.
Oh, Biggie. Is it good? I've never listened to it.
Yeah.
I
like it.
It's a classic. It's, you know, one of the all-time classic rap albums. It just happened to come out 2 weeks after he was shot. It wasn't like they assembled it after he died. But
oh,
he just happened to die like 2 weeks before it came out, so...
Biggie.
I guess that counts. If we're talking about things that were actually
put together after
he died.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Amy Winehouse later. How's that?
We're going to talk about the Amy Winehouse album later, which I think is pretty good. The album that George Harrison put out in 2002, Brainwashed, I thought was quite good. I don't know if a lot of other people liked it, but I thought that was one of his better recent albums.
Never heard that one.
At the time.
Yeah, George is my favorite anyway, so.
What about, did Band of Gypsies come out during, like, when Hendrix was alive?
Yeah, it did.
Oh, okay, so.
Yeah.
It did, and I'm the only person basically in the world who liked it, but I thought that Michael Jackson album that came out last year was pretty solid.
Oh, yeah.
I liked the single. I didn't hear the rest.
It was good. It wasn't among his best work or anything, but I thought it was pretty solid.
Well, there you go. That's one for the listeners to ponder. What else is in the news?
Woo Life is starting on another album, which is probably only I care about because I love Woo Life, but it's pretty sweet. Because I guess their first album was like pretty. That stuff had been done for a while when it came out. So they're
now is Woo Life a Wu Tang related thing?
No,
I was gonna ask that. Oh my god.
No, they're not.
Neither of you know who Woo Life is? Oh man.
No.
They're a band from Britain who kind of came out of nowhere this year and brought out an album which is doing well in all the album polls, including our one. Not to give away any spoilers. It's WU space LYF, and it stands for World Unite, Lucifer Youth Foundation. And basically, their whole shtick when they came out was like they didn't do interviews, they didn't like want to sign to a label or anything. They just put out their album, kind of surprised everyone. They've done like minimal touring, so it doesn't surprise me they're going straight back to work on their second album already, because they're so not into like promoting themselves. They just want to make music and put it out. So I wouldn't be surprised if we hear that before the end of next year.
You saw them live though, right? And they were amazing. Right?
Yeah, just last week. It was amazing.
Oh, you saw?
Yeah.
Didn't you see them earlier in the year? Or is that Phil?
No, Phil saw them earlier in the year, yeah.
So they were really good live?
Yeah, amazing. Amazing. And people were moshing. It's like the most active crowd I've seen in ages.
Yeah, that's the weird thing about your music is you can, like, sing along, but it's, like, with the melodies, but you could also mosh. It's really weird.
Yeah. Also, I thought the way he sung was like an affectation, but that's also the way he speaks.
Oh, no, yeah. If you listen to him speak, he's really...
You cannot understand a word he was saying.
Yeah. No, that's what I love about that band is his voice. It's just so passionate and, like, just... Yo, he's so... I don't know. To me, it's, like, so passionate and fearless, kind of. Just goes for it, which is awesome. But, yeah, that's exciting, I think.
Yeah.
And then Feist and Mastodon are covering each other for Record Store Day next year on a 7-inch.
I want to know which songs they're doing of each other's.
Yeah.
I would like to see Mastodon do 1, 2, 3, 4.
I somehow don't expect that to happen. I'd like to see Feist do The Last Baron.
I'm just imagining... That would be awesome. I'm just imagining Brett Hines singing that chorus with the metal growls, and that's very amusing.
Oh my god.
I think out of the two, the Feist covering Mastodon is going to be more successful than Mastodon covering Feist.
Yeah, definitely.
I want to know how they met. I think they did meet.
They met Jules Holland backstage.
Oh, there you go. Jules Holland bringing the people together.
Yeah, and...
Of course.
I think they're covering stuff off, oh yeah, that's right, they're covering stuff off, like, their new album, so.
Oh, so something from Metals and something from what the hell's the new Mastodon album called?
The Hunter.
The Hunter.
I haven't even listened to the new Mastodon album yet, to be honest with you.
It's not that good, I don't know.
That's alright. I thought it was alright.
It's alright. It's alright, yeah.
I mean, because I was a huge fan of their last album, but I haven't really heard very many good reviews of their recent ones, so I haven't really gotten around to listening to it yet, but I think Feist's new album is great, and it kind of flew a little bit under the radar and for when it came out.
Yeah, because people were kind of expecting like another hit-packed album, like The Reminder, but this one was much more, you know, not as many hooks, but still really, really good songs.
So, and then sad news today, Altered Zones shut down. Which is kind of
I don't think Erica's that sad about it.
Oh, you're not, Erica? Oh, yeah,
Erica's
I was being a bully. No, I mean, I appreciate what they set out to do, you know, sort of, like, highlight DIY, you know, like, sort of really lo-fi indie, but I just always thought their layout and their presentation was really sort of confusing and intriguing at the same time, like, it just sort of looked like a Tumblr. I think maybe Sean has said this before, too. It just sort of looks like this really low-budget blog. I don't know. Which, that was probably the point, I understand. But
you just hear so... I didn't even... Until you guys said that Altered Zones shut down 2 seconds ago, I didn't even know that Altered Zones still existed. I just... Like, I remember summer of 2010, they announced... And it was a big deal for like 2 weeks, and I don't even think I've ever heard anybody mention it again after that. So
Pitchfork didn't promote them. Well, I don't know. Like, not to talk shit.
Isn't Pitchfork also affiliated with some video game site now too?
Yeah, Killzone Mag. It's Killscreen, which they promote a load, and then they didn't promote Altered Zones at all.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah. That was a curious thing, because I just didn't know, like, they kind of gave rise to the site, and they just kind of, like, left it in the dust, so I don't know, like, well,
that was about. That might have been part of the strategy, because the website basically, like Erica said, just looked like sort of a Tumblr theme, but maybe the point that they were trying to make was, this is so underground that we're not even going to promote it on this super prominent indie website, but at the same time, what does that accomplish?
Well, I feel like it never really defined itself all that well, because, like, the stuff that they promoted still got on Pitchfork. I mean, it wasn't...
Yeah, it was like a feeder site for Pitchfork. It's like, oh, Pitchfork's gonna check out anything they post, and if they like it, they'll take it to Pitchfork. So why would anyone check Altered Zones?
So was Altered Zones just, I've never really understood
what it is.
Independent thing from Pitchfork? Do the Pitchfork editors have any say in what goes up on it, or are they just sort of affiliated?
It's independent. It's 14 different, like, kind of small blog sites that came together and, came together to put together this one blog site, and all the stuff from those smaller blog sites went up on Altered Zones, I don't know if you guys read the kind of rest in peace statement, but they said the reason why they were kind of shutting down was because there just wasn't, like, the people that started the blog had kind of drifted away from it and doing their own thing, and, like, some people are moving up to Pitchfork and whatever, so it wasn't just, like, you know, lack of interest or traffic, but I feel like that sort of showed through, like, it just didn't have much of a presence and, like, didn't have much, like, enthusiasm behind it. It was sort of weird and baffling a little bit.
I don't even think I've ever actually read Altered Zone.
I know, like...
I liked it. I mean, I never thought it was, like, anything special, but I liked it.
I think where it existed, so, like, I'm from Burlington, Vermont, and we have a small kind of noise experimental scene here, and a couple of people I know around here got on there. So I think on that level, it could have been, like, something cool, like, promoting kind of more local stuff inside of local scenes, but for the most part, I don't know, it did just kind of... Like, they had fucking Bradford Cox on there, and it's like, that's the biggest indie guy you can be, so I don't know, it's weird. Anyway, not to, like, bitch about it as they're taking down the shop, but they're done. And then, last piece of news, Sean, do you want to take this one about Trent Reznor?
Yeah, today Trent Reznor announced on his Twitter feed that, the score that he is releasing later this month for the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo adaptation that David Fincher is directing is going to be 6 LPs in length. And he had previously been saying something about how the score was going to clock in at, you know, 2 hours and 40 minutes, and I was wondering whether that was going to be just the how long the music for the movie was, or whether he was actually going to release a soundtrack record that long, but I guess we have our answer now, so...
So is the film going to have Trent's music all the way through? There's going to be no silence? Because if there's 2 hours and 40 minutes of music, I can't imagine the film is much longer than that.
Well, the book is like 600 or 700 pages long, so...
How long is the Swedish film?
It's like 2 hours, I think. A little more than 2 hours. But, that's crazy. I mean, even if it is that long, it's crazy to even put all that music out, you know? Like, people don't usually, even if the orchestral score is, like, super huge and not all of it's being used, they don't really usually put out that much music.
I think, I love Trent Reznor, but I think he's always had a problem in that he doesn't know where to edit himself. A lot of the Nine Inch Nails album could have been cut down, I think.
Wow, I'm going to strongly disagree with you on that, but okay.
All right.
Are you a fan of Nine Inch Nails, Sean? I've never gotten into them.
Yeah. Oh. I'm a huge fan of it. Trent Reznor. Rob is probably referring to The Fragile, which is in...
No, I think The Fragile is actually the best album. I think the last two albums, like, well, they were like 16 tracks each or something.
The Slip was only like 11 or 12.
Shit. I haven't listened to Nine Inch Nails since they split up. It's too sad.
How long ago was that?
Like a year and a half.
I literally don't know anything about them. Blind spot.
I guess I'm really just thinking of Year Zero, which could have used a bit.
Yeah.
And
only output of Trent that I didn't feel was the thing that he did with his wife. Yeah, I actually did like it at first, but it just kind of lost a lot of momentum.
It just sounded like Nine Inch Nails with a female vocalist, and like I don't even know if she has a good voice or not, because she was mostly just whispering the entire time on that EP that they put out last year.
The full length thing must be coming pretty soon, I guess.
They just announced that they're going to have a Brian Ferry cover that they're recording on this Dragon Tattoo soundtrack.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Oh wow!
Just put a Roxy Music song in that. Okay. Let's talk about what we've been listening to. Let's start with Sean. What have you been listening to?
I just got this yesterday, so I've only listened to it a couple times, but Amy Winehouse's label and, I guess, estate, if you want to call it that, just put out an album called Lioness Hidden Treasures that has a lot of stuff that she was either collaborations with other people or stuff that she was working on when she died, which, you know, I've only listened to it a couple times, but it's pretty interesting. Have any of you guys heard it yet?
I've only heard a few songs. I thought the one with Nas on it was really good. I liked that a lot.
Yeah, that was good.
Oh, wow.
There's a cover of Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow that's great. There's a couple of original versions of her more famous songs. Like, she has this slower version of Tears Dry on Their Own that's really good. She has a cover of Body and Soul that's a duet with Tony Bennett that I really liked.
I heard her version of The Girl from Ipanema is really good.
Yeah, I like that. That was excellent, too. There's a new version of the song Valerie that she sang on Mark Ronson's album a few years ago. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That song is humongous in the UK.
I guess it just wasn't that big here, but yeah, there's an alternate version of that, too. You can't really call this an album because there's a lot of like previous, like new alternate versions of old songs on it. But it's just sort of a glimpse into, I guess, what she was working on at the time. And there's a little bit more reggae influence on some of these new songs, which I thought was kind of interesting. But
yeah, I mean, wasn't it like widely known that she'd been like in the Caribbean quite a lot while recording what was supposed to be her third album? I think she was.
I guess I hadn't really been keeping up with what she had been doing. I sort of didn't start thinking about what her next album was going to be like, honestly, until she died. And I was like, oh, wait, what has she been doing the last 3 years that we haven't basically heard anything from her?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure she's been in the Caribbean working on new stuff, which is probably why you get to hear the reggae influence.
Mm-hmm.
So a worthwhile release, then.
I'd say it's worth checking out.
What was her kind of like? I never really got into her. Was she like pop? Like, how big of a pop star was she at her height?
She was huge in the
pretty
UK. I don't know. About
she was pretty. She was pretty popular in America. She was sort of a precursor to, I guess, how big Adele is right now.
Yeah.
So
Rehab was probably her biggest song here.
Yeah.
So she was kind of a little bit more... Man, I'm so illiterate when it comes to pop music. So she obviously wasn't electronic, or was she? Like, what kind of music?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No, she sounded like a total 60s throwback.
Okay.
Yeah, it was... like a more modern throwback, definitely.
So it was a little bit more, it was a little bit more than just like a, like, pop, like something like Lady Gaga, where it's like very much just doesn't really exceed being a pop star.
Absolutely.
Okay. And, All right, so anything more on that album?
I mean, not really. It, like I said, it's sort of a hodgepodge just because, it does feel kind of thrown together. But, I mean, if you're a fan of Amy Winehouse or at least sort of curious about where her head was at musically when she died, I'd say it's worth checking out.
They also put out a video for Our Day Will Come, which is like a clip of like all the nicest moments. It's a nice tribute, I think. I mean, I guess it's kind of cheesy, but it's worth checking out. It's up on the site. So yeah, check that out. Amy Winehouse, Our Day Will Come video.
Is that out yet? Or did we get...
It is out on Tuesday.
So, do you think that's going to sell like gangbusters? Like, what's the...
Yeah, it's going to sell.
Well, the thing is, they can't really market it like, oh, this is her new album. It's just right. Sort of a compilation of...
Yeah, the title kind of speaks to that, which is... At least they're not trying to make it something that it isn't, I guess. Rob, what have you been listening to?
I've been listening to this band Arms because year's winding down, there's been less releases, I've been going around to stuff that people have been recommending, and then there's this band Arms, ARMS, it's all in uppercase, but it doesn't stand for anything. And it's by this guy called Todd Goldstein, who used to be in a band called Harlem Shakes, who people really loved back in like the mid-2000s. I never listened to them, but they split up, and then he started this band, and they've only just put out an album, even though they've been kind of working for 5 or so years now, and I think it's only available digitally. It's quite an under the radar release. I think you can stream the whole thing on their Bandcamp as well if you want to check it out, or even on Spotify as well. It's a pretty simple, straightforward indie rock album, nice and poppy. I think it's got some. It's like one of those albums you listen to it and you think it's really simple, and it's got nice hooks, but then the more you listen to it, it's like. It's quite complex the way they put these songs together, and I really like his voice, and he's got some good lyrics. It's all about a bummer summer, like, about a girl, that general, almost emo, but not quite emo. It's a bit Death Cab-y at points. I don't know, it's just really, a really easy listen, and I'd recommend it.
So I listened to it a little bit, and, I mean, the only thing I like, I mean, it's pretty good, but it's very much, like, this kind of sound, like, you notice the percussion is, like, very, I mean, someone could easily compare it to something like Vampire Weekend, where it has that sort of...
Yeah, I could understand that, yeah.
I don't know, like, that style, that kind of whatever style of drumming has become so overdone at this point, don't you think? A little bit?
Well, like, the kind of African influence, what's the word they use? Afrobeat?
Yeah, I guess.
Afrobeat, yeah.
That word's kind of died out in 2011. I'm sure it'll be back when Vampire Weekend bring out the new album.
Yeah.
Vampy Weeks.
I don't hear it as much as I think you're making out. I don't know. I think this is more...
The question I think that we want to know, Rob, about this album is, are there violins on it, and do they suggest violins?
there are no violins, which suggests poverty, I guess. I think this is much more like the songs on this are like much more driven and fast paced.
Yeah, that's true.
Anything Vampire Weekend does.
But like, not. I guess it's just that one thing because like Caveman, who kind of just came out with an album, has that style of progression. Snowman, who sounds totally different than Vampire Weekend. They're like more experimental. But they all have this like very. I don't know. I'm just like wondering if that style of like drumming. I guess you can't really complain about a style of drumming, though. It's so basic. I don't know. But
I don't know, man. We're waiting for the next evolution in drumming.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for, like, when fucking breakbeat comes back to all indie rock. But, yeah, I don't know. Not to, like, kind of just, like, complain about the album that you brought to the table this week, but, like, the guy's voice, I don't know. I didn't really like it. It's a little bit too, like, poppy, almost, like...
A bit too perfect.
Yeah.
Do you like Ben Gibbard's voice?
I'm not really into Death Cab at all. So.
I get what you mean. Like, it doesn't break, or, you know, it's always nice to hear a voice, like, break on, like, an emotional part or something, but yeah, it is pretty perfect. I kind of see where you're coming from.
But yeah, it's good.
Is it more like Ben Gibbard's voice or less like Ben Gibbard's
voice? It's not. It's actually more like Colin Malloy's voice, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah, like I listened to the first two songs and I was like, okay. But then, like, the third and fourth song, like you said, it's like has a lot of momentum to it, which is nice. It's definitely worth checking out, I think. It's
called Summer Skills. I don't think I said that. Summer Skills. And I think it's on their Bandcamp and it's on Spotify, so go check it out.
Yeah. I've been listening to an album by this duo called Sepulchre Cure, and the album self-titled. And it's this, I guess it's this, well, it's the kind of album that I love, just because it's very much current, kind of like bass music type trends, but it's done really, really well. And it just came out. Rob, did you listen to this?
Yeah, I listened to it a couple times.
What'd you think? Because we were talking about Scuba a couple weeks ago, and like I think this album is a little bit, and it's sort of similar in its influence a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I liked it, but I didn't think it was that special. I don't know. I kind of felt like, I felt like it was trying to be dark, like Scuba's thing, but then I look at, like, the album cover, and I'm like, and they're putting all these, like, kind of almost hooks in, like, vocal hooks in some places.
Yeah, I don't think it's trying to be dark. I think it's actually trying to be sort of, I mean, it's dancey, but it has, like, a lot of, it's sort of poppy a little bit, too, in the type of melodies and hooks that it has.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the opening track, Me, and I like Breezin', and then the rest kind of, I don't know, just kind of floated by for me.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm really obsessed with half of the duo, the guy's named Travis Stewart, and he's sort of known, I mean, he has this, his kind of solo artist moniker is Machine Drum, and he's been around for quite a while, doing sort of Profuse 73 style kind of glitch hip-hop. But then he came out with this album earlier this year called Rooms, which is probably my favorite kind of bass album of the year. And it's really frenetic and aggressive and like, really, I guess, in touch with, like, a lot of the current sort of bass music influences. But, like, this is a little bit more toned down and a little bit more easy on the ears. But I'm super into him, just because I think he's doing something that will kind of, and he, I mean, he's American, so he really doesn't have, like, this established place in this scene, but it's really cool to see him come out of nowhere and kind of be able to do this type of sound, like, really better than pretty much anybody. And I think like the special part of the album is really the kind of undercurrent and the subtleties and in the bass of it. Like,
wait, are you talking about Machine Drum or Sepulchre?
What am I talking about? I guess, well, that would apply to both. I mean, like, his style is very kind of subterranean and less, I mean, there's a lot of hooks and, like, kind of overt stuff going on, but at the same time, like, if you listen to Machine Drum once, you're going to be like, oh, man, that was sort of a lot to take in.
Yeah, I want to listen to the album. I only heard about it for the first time this week because of the Sepulchre getting a lot talked about a lot. And then you sent out that track earlier when we were talking. I listened to it. I thought it was really good. So I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, and it's I like it. I think it's better than Sepulchre, just because it's a little bit more even like as far as like the song, how the songs immediately come off. They're like really heavy and like aggressive, whereas Sepulchre is a little bit more relaxed and but I still think like what makes them good is the same, which is sort of the bass tones and like the undercurrent. So I don't know. Yeah, keep going with it.
What did you call them? The sandwiches?
I don't even know what you're referring to.
You just said something was sandwiches.
Yeah, you just said sandwiches.
Did I? Man, I must be. I'm hungry. Hungry, guys.
What the hell? Anyway, did Machine Drum come out on Hot Flush as well?
No, that came out on Planet Mew. I said the I don't know what I said.
You said what I really like is the sandwiches. You literally said that.
I might have said, I don't know, whatever. I do like sandwiches, so whatever.
That was bizarre. All right.
Fuck it.
This podcast is sponsored by Subway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
totally.
If only.
Yeah, so I think it's really good, but, you know, not everybody does, like Rob, so.
Yes.
Take it or leave it, I guess. but anyway, Erica, what have you been listening to?
I have been listening to 50 Words for Snow by the amazing Kate Bush.
And how do you
like
it?
Me too, actually.
And,
I've been listening to that one as well.
Everyone should be listening to it. So it's her first full-length album of new material since 2005's Ariel. And it's released on sort of this EMI imprint called Fish People, at least in the UK. And here it's distributed by Anti Records. And it's really beautiful, and it's almost, it makes me at a loss for words, I guess. It's very, I was talking to someone about it, and they were like, well, I can't really get into it, it's kind of difficult. And, you know, I agree that it's not for everyone. It's very, I think as Kate gets older, she sort of orients more toward, like, I don't know what I would call it, like, jazz rock, that or art rock, that kind of style. And so the songs are really lengthy and really, very layered and sort of, they just sort of, they almost like, they're really almost meditative at some points.
Yeah.
And especially like Snowflake, like the first track. And
Which features her, and, her son.
Yeah, her son, Birdie. Yeah, which a lot of people were like, in some reviews on some websites that I won't name, we're like, wow, she goes really, her register really changes here. I'm like, dude, did you not, like, even read up on this album or whatever? Like, I don't know, that was kind of lazy, but,
yeah.
One thing that I sort of, we can definitely talk more about it, but, I just can't really get enough of Kate's vocal style, like, as she's sort of evolved, you know, with age, you know, she's, obviously her register has dropped.
It's so much nicer now.
It is, yeah, and it's
yeah,
so
like it
sort of, it's so, like, sultry and seductive, and that really works to songs like Misty, that's about snowman-human relations.
Yeah, it is.
It really works.
That sounds
yeah.
Sunset, right?
Yeah, it is
yeah.
So good.
So it really works to, you know, that song's advantage.
I think we need to talk about how much of an achievement it is that she can, of hers to make a song about a love affair with a snowman and have it not sound completely ridiculous.
It's such a simple but, like, really good metaphor. Like, the way she, I don't know. It's awesome. I love that song so much. And easily the best song about doing the hizzy, like, in 2011. Like, easily. Like, fuck The Weeknd.
What did you just say there, Will?
I was talking about sandwiches again, man. Like, I love sandwiches so much. they have sex in that song. That song's about sex with a snowman.
Right? Yeah, man.
I see what you're saying. You're saying it's just, like, so much sexier than any song that's about sex in 2011. Like,
yeah.
You know, S&M, like, is totally, like, irrelevant now, you know.
Okay.
The Rihanna song.
Yeah, totally.
Being non-explicit is being the new explicit.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. For a while.
I think 50 Words for Snow is such a transportative album. I don't know. When I listen to it, I like it completely wraps me up and takes me away
totally.
To like a glacial plane where I'm like running around with snowmen and stuff. Like the front cover is so good. I just think it's like a really homogenous. It's a really good album. I mean, would you call it a concept album or not? Like, it's almost a concept album about Snow.
Totally is.
Yeah. I think Kate herself, like, I think there was an interview in the Quietest where she was kind of like, well, I don't want to call it a concept album. I mean, it kind of is. It just has a sort of very distinct, like, subject matter, you know, and I feel like the, you know, even the songs are, they kind of grow out of the same keys and sounds and, oh, you know, so I think it makes total sense to call it, you know, a kind of concept album.
But she's always kind of, you know, her albums have always kind of built from a very singular vision, if you will. Would you guys agree with that?
Like, oh, yeah.
Hounds of Love has a very specific sound, and so does, you know, all of them, so. And this is no different.
That's true. Yeah. They all kind of have that thread. Some thread going through them.
I think the drumming is amazing on this album. It's really subtle, but it's so good.
There is no drumming. For a lot of it, there is no drumming until, like, the second song, isn't there?
Is that true? I don't even know. But, like...
It is.
Like,
yeah,
Steve. It's Steve Gadd, so you don't really... It's not really surprising how great the drumming is.
But, for Misty, when the song kind of crescendos, it's really subtle... and patient. Like, it's a long song, but it doesn't feel like it at all. It's really right. takes its time and builds up, and the end of that song is so good. Like, just I could go on and on about it.
So, on the title track, 50 Words for Snow, Stephen Fry actually gives 50 words for Snow. Do you guys think
he does.
Do you think he came up with those words himself, or was told to say, what to say?
Some of them were pretty silly.
Well, yeah, so some of them are silly, and I think to an extent some of them are made up. It's interesting, you know, I'm, like, really attracted to the whole concept. Like, the moment Kate announced it earlier this year, or her people announced it, you know, I was just like, this is perfect, because, you know, Kate's obviously been, you know, full disclosure, you know, if you guys, you know, couldn't tell, she's, you know, one of my favorite artists of all time. And she, and so, like, and, you know, my course of study, or what I'm, like, studying to be professionally as a linguist, and one of the things that they sort of teach us, that is, like, one of the foundational theories of linguistics, is that the Sapir Whorf hypothesis, which was that there are, you know, Eskimos have supposedly had 50 words for snow, which was later debunked. It's not true. But basically the point was that snow was, like, so essential to their daily lives, and that it sort of influenced the way that they thought about the world. And so basically, like, it, you know, the underlining message is like, language shapes thought. So, you know, that whole, like, 50 words for snow track is just, like, really fascinating to me.
So, and that's definitely, like, the conscious reasoning behind the title of the record?
I think the Quietest did, you know, basically, you know, approached her and was like, you know, that, you know, that was debunked a long time ago, right? And she's like, yeah, you know, but I still think that just the very idea is fascinating. And so I think that's just sort of where she was going with that.
Yeah, I didn't even know that. That's cool.
And how about Snowden at Wheeler Street? Elton John killing it.
I know!
Yeah.
I love Elton John too, and I haven't paid attention to him in a really long time, but, like, it's so awesome.
I think his voice, like Kate's, I think his voice has matured a lot in recent
years. Yeah, I love his voice now. Oh my god!
Another.
If only he could bring out an album as good as 50 Words of Snow.
Yeah. So what I really like about it, I mean, Kate's obviously in her 50s. And, like, just being a part of, you know, the constant indie cycle, it's so refreshing to get someone of that age, like, her perspective on the world, someone that age, to really make good music. And, because, I don't know, I'm so sick of a lot of the 20-something attitude. So this was so nice just to kind of, like, dive into and, like, really, like Rob said, it's really immersive and imagistic and all that stuff. And it was refreshing, but it's just... so good too. I don't know. It's a great album.
It's interesting, you know, just talking about Kate Bush generally, like, this has definitely, I think you guys would agree, this has been, like, you know, the women's year for, you know, just especially, like, you know, more avant pop or rock leaning women.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and who have all, you know, undoubtedly been influenced by Kate. So see it come full circle and sort of see her like put out an album this year, and you know she's basically the blueprint for a lot of these artists. So
and it's also
that
cool.
was really cool.
It's also cool like that she puts out an album that doesn't sound like what people are inspired by
anything
from her,
else.
You know,
right?
So.
She doesn't seem like she's just trying to stay current. She seems like she just sort of exists in a world completely different from anything else that.
Yeah. It's so awesome.
When the album was announced, did you guys think it was going to be amazing, or were you slightly skeptical?
Well, I'm a huge Kate Bush fanboy, so I'm of course I my default for her is just assuming anything is going to be amazing. I was not skeptical at all.
Well, yeah. I was skeptical because I thought Director's Cut was pointless and not very good. So I thought she kind of lost it. So
I think Sean will agree. Like Director's Cut, I think especially all the songs from The Red Shoes, those were like just on point. You know, so.
Yeah, honestly, when I I listened to that album all the time when it came out, like in April or May. I forget when it came out this year, but I just listened to it recently, just because I've been on a huge Kate Bush kick lately because of the new album. Mm-hmm. But I think that the Red Shoes material that she re-recorded on the Director's Cut all sounded a lot better than what it was originally, and the stuff from the Sensual World I think suffered a little bit. I think that album she should have just sort of left alone, but.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Shoes stuff, the way she revisited that this year, I thought was extremely well done.
So I haven't been paying attention to her until right now. I mean, other than, you know, just listening to Hounds of Love a few times a year or whatever. But, like, was this, like, did anyone know this 50 Words for Snow was coming out, like, as the time Director's Cut was coming out? Or is this a surprise?
I think her people kind of hinted that she was working on something, and that, you know, nobody really knew what. But so, and then, like a couple months ago,
given her history, given her history, I would not have been surprised if she didn't have a new album out for another 3 years after this.
Right.
She's still got many more albums in her. I feel.
I hope so.
Oh yeah.
I actually thought she was older than 53 or whatever she is, because she's been around for so long.
She started really young.
Well, she started, she was, what, 16, 17 when she wrote Wuthering Heights?
Yeah. And that came out in 78?
I believe so.
At least The Kick Inside came out in 78. I'm not sure if the
single was early. Yeah, she might have been as old as 18 then, but yeah, she started pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to see, like, Florence and the Machine come out with an album, and obviously she likes to name drop Kate a lot for kind of her classic era stuff. And then, you know, 50 Words for Snow comes out, and I mean, one, it doesn't sound like Kate's classic era stuff at all, but then at the same time, it's like so, you know, superior to kind of like anything that people influenced by her classic era have like managed to come up with. I don't know.
I think on the one hand, Will, I think that's totally true. But on the other hand, you can't really consider Bjork's Biophilia or St. Vincent's Strange Mercy as being inferior to anything.
That's totally fair. Florence and the Machine.
I mean, I think I'll agree with you that Florence, and I think we've talked about this on the show a little bit or a few weeks ago, but I'll agree with you that Florence and the Machine is not on the same level as any of this stuff.
Yeah.
No.
So the ultimate question is, where does 50 Words for Snow rank in the list of best Kate Bush albums?
That's a great question.
Yeah,
I think I could go as high as 3 or 4 with it.
Behind what?
Well, you'd have to put Hounds of Love and The Dreaming first. I've always been a huge fan of this Sensual World, but you could even talk me into 50 Words for Snow above that. So I would maybe put it there. Then you would after that you would probably go Ariel, Kick Inside. God, what? I'm I'm totally blanking on what the name of her third album was, the one that had like Breathing and Babushka.
Never Forever.
Yeah, Never Forever. That was I actually just recently re-listened to that for the first time in a while. I thought it was pretty uneven, but a lot of the
singles are really good.
Singles are phenomenal. The thing I want to know is when she's going to release a DVD collection of all of her music videos, because to me the videos that she has put out over her career are as innovative and as forward thinking as anything from Michael Jackson or Peter Gabriel or all these other people that you hear about as being, you know, video pioneers. I think that her work in the music video medium, especially in the 80s, was pretty unparalleled.
Yeah, cloud busting. That had like Donald Sutherland in it, and it was longer than the song. I think it was like 7 minutes long or something. There's actually, I think, I don't know if it's official or if somebody just ripped it, but there's like a cloud busting video version of that song. So
yeah,
I really like. I mean, we haven't really even talked about like, I mean, other than the drumming. Like, I really like. I kind of like the ballads a little bit more than. The title. I think the title track is the kind of more upbeat one. Am I right with that?
That and Wild Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wild Man. Like, I really like when. I mean, the longer tracks. Obviously, it's like really. There's a lot of the thick bass and a lot of like piano, like kind of like smoky piano and like strings, like really really subtle kind of string arrangements and. All that stuff is so. It reminds me a little bit of like Talk Talk in the way that how subtle the it's so like again like it's just perfect timing for this album to come out. I feel like it's so doesn't sound like anything at all, and at the same time it's just amazing in that sense and what it does.
Did any of you guys fear that it was just going to be a novelty Christmas album with a name like that and be released this time of year?
I never am skeptical about Kate Bush albums before they come out. She's somebody like I will always and forever give her the benefit of the doubt that what she's going to be doing is not going to. Novelty Christmas, like where would that even just from the title? No,
I see what Rob's saying though, like because like last year Tori Amos put out Midwinter Graces, which I didn't even know that was going to be as holiday themed as it was,
I didn't even know that came out, but I would say that the album that Tori Amos put out this year, I thought was a lot better than he's done in a number of years. Probably at least
in years, yeah.
Scarlet's Walk was probably the last
Scarlet's
one that I
Walk,
say.
Yeah.
I think I'm just prejudiced against artists that are like, their classic era has kind of, is in the past a little bit, and like just,
yeah,
and
past their prime.
So like when someone says Kate Bush is coming out with a new album, like I didn't listen to it until I read Sean's review, and even though I knew Sean and Erica just from Twitter were like super into it, I was like, oh yeah, they're Kate Bush fans, so of course they're gonna like it. I don't care at all. But then you know, I actually listened to it and I'm blown away by it. So.
Well, have you listened to Ariel, the album that she put out in 2005?
Nope, I haven't.
That one, I think, has also held up extremely well over the years. Especially the second disc. I think the first disc is really good, but the second disc is, to me, is as good as anything else she's ever done.
Yeah.
So she has,
and it's kind of if you liked this album, I think it's kind of in that same vein. It's not. They're not.
It's a little bit less. It's a little bit jazzier, and it's a little bit more active. It's not as many like just purely piano ballads as this one is, but it is a lot of the same aesthetic, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, one more question.
Yeah.
How old mm-hmm. is her son?
13.
12 now, yeah, or 13. 13?
Do we expect him to have a future in music?
From this, there's definitely potential. It seems for good singing. I will cop to not even realizing that it was a different person on the first time through.
Yeah, I was definitely like, this sounds weird, and then I just sort of looked it up. But this is like the year for like matriarchal kind of avant rock, whatever, women to put their kids on their albums, because Tori Amos put her daughter on Night of Hunters. So nice. I thought that was an interesting connection. Yeah.
Who else would you like to hear have their kids on their record?
Does Tom Waits have any kids?
Hey, Beyonce.
Yeah, Beyonce's kid's gonna be on the next record. Oh no, Jay-Z's gotta use a sample on his next record.
Well, Well, I mean, it would be sort of like, you know, that Eminem song, "My Dad's Gone Crazy," where he where he basically went when his daughter was like 4 or 5, made the loop of her like your baby speak and just sort of looped it and rapped about doing coke over it.
What? Yeah.
Really? I've never heard this.
It's on the Eminem show.
Oh my god,
show.
Yeah.
That sounds awful.
it's a pretty good song, but...
Yeah, it is.
Interesting.
Other people whose kids we would want to see on their albums,
I think if Sonic Youth do split up, I think either Kim or Thurston should claim their kids and start a new band.
Have Coco be on one of them.
Yeah.
I want to see that child that Justin Bieber fathered be on his next album.
Wait, Justin Bieber's a father? Is that just
supposedly. He has this woman accusing him of... I really hope it's true.
I hope it is.
That's awesome.
Then that would just ruin him. Maybe not.
You would think, but hey, but you know, I mean, why would that ruin him?
That's a
good
question.
Well, you know, it would ruin his baby mama's life because she would die at the hands.
Right.
All the people
on Twitter who create trending topics. Like, I'm gonna actually go on Twitter right now and see if any Justin Bieber related things are trending right now, and it looks like they're not, which is kind of a rarity.
I don't think I've ever. You'll
see so many. Weird, just bizarre Justin Bieber trending topics all the time. Like his
Sex Panther.
Yes, Bieber the Sex Panther. Exactly. the 11-year-old girls who are on Twitter doing those like trending topics. If he actually had a child that wasn't with them, they would destroy the life of whoever it was.
Yeah.
But I still hope it's true, though.
There are 11-year-olds on Twitter.
there have to be. How many Bieber trending topics are there?
I don't know. That's just weird.
Oh, guys.
That's his entire fan base is 11-year-old
girls
and Shaquille O'Neal.
Guys, Big Boy just put his Words With Friends username on Twitter. I think he's going to get like a million new games now.
Why would he do that?
I don't think he realized.
Apparently, he's really good.
Yeah, he's.
I think he's tweeting.
I mean, you kind of have to be to be. I mean, when you're as good of a rapper as Big Boy is, you have to, I guess, know a lot of words. I feel like.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, speaking of Big Boy and Kate Bush, we should really be hoping for a collaboration because he's been pushing for it forever.
Hasn't he been lobbying for that like for 10 years? I feel like back. I remember like. Around the time that Speakerbox The Love Below came out, I was reading an article in Rolling Stone where he was saying that Kate Bush was like the one person that he would want to collaborate with the most. I have no idea whether she has acknowledged that or anything.
I'm sure she doesn't even know who he is. I mean, I read an interview recently and she said she doesn't follow new music at all.
She likes gorillas. I mean, I know that's like not like...
Say that she likes gorillas. So she must know that hip hop is a thing that exists.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go that far.
Wasn't Tupac also a fan of hers?
I think so. Yeah, I know that Big Boy tried to go and find her in the Loch Ness Fortress of London. I think those are his exact words. I was like, I didn't know the Loch Ness Monster lived in a fortress, but
in London. That doesn't make any sense. He was definitely high.
Well, I find that really hard to believe that the Big Boy was high at any point.
I'd totally listen to a Big Boy Kate Bush collaboration. Like, why wouldn't you?
Oh yeah.
But well, Big Boy's been collaborating with some interesting people like Modest Mouse and Yukimi Nagano from Little Dragon. So, you know, maybe he's going to pull that one out on his next album. It's going to be like a surprise Kate Bush feature. That'll be awesome.
Yeah. But, like, it's Kate Bush. Like
At the very least, he should sample, like, Wild Man or something.
Yeah. Like, I feel like she's such a huge, like, star that, like, you can't just feature her, you know? Like,
Is she, though, in America? Like, I've never met a person outside of... I kind of touched on this the last time we talked about her, but I have never met anybody outside of sort of our internet music Twitter circle of music nerds who even knows who she is.
But what I mean is, like, Big Boy... Like, even someone as big as Big Boy should be groveling at her feet, you know? Not just like, oh, now and I'm featuring Kate Bush on my new album. It's like, no, you should do something.
Well, he respects her a lot.
Well,
to be fair,
Drake's album is featuring Stevie Wonder on a song.
That's true. Yeah, but Drake, whatever. Big Boy seems a little bit more...
Here's a hypothetical. What if Drake got a Kate Bush collaboration? I think I might commit.
No.
Suicide.
Yeah, I'd probably commit some sort of spooky.
I was just going to say that I could, you know, Drake and I guess a whole, like, league of hip-hop artists are sort of turning to that sort of darker beat-making style. And and I could see, like, Drake coming out and, like, sampling, like, Get Out of My House or something, and then I would probably kill him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be on board.
Go on a Bieber fan-esque quest to kill.
Yes.
Like, there should just be a committee for who's worthy of sampling Kate Bush or collaborating with her. And I think Big Boy would pass that test.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that collaboration actually happen.
Yeah. I think Big Boy is, you know, creative enough as an artist. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, collaborations that you've been waiting for a long time don't always turn out to be as good as you want, like Tom York and MF Doom.
Oh, that's totally true.
That's true.
Totally phoned it in.
Yeah, so Kate Bush, it's a great album. Check out Sean's review. It's good. We recommended it.
Yeah.
Rob, did you want to plug the holiday feature, holiday gift guide?
Yeah, we have a holiday gift guide up on the site, and it's got lots of cool ideas of what to buy to people for Christmas. If you're struggling for Christmas present ideas and you want to buy them something music related or buy them some actual music, there's some few ideas there. We're going to keep updating it throughout the festive period. And if you have any tips on stuff we think you should add, just like throw us a comment.
It's work in progress?
Yeah, so if you have
any... I didn't even know that.
If you want to add more stuff, go for it.
I'm going to add some stuff.
So yeah, that's there. It's not on... It's in the slider at the moment. I'm going to get Evan to put it permanently on the front page when I get to talk to him. So hopefully, by the time you hear this podcast, it should just be there on the front page, over to the right, probably. Check it out.
Yeah, so that's been the 130 BPM podcast. Erica, thanks for stopping by to talk to Kate Bush.
No problem.
And we will see you next week. Say goodbye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks.